Clerk will call the docket. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Rosemary Thorne. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, the Commonwealth of Virginia. The Court of Appeals in this case erred when it held that it was unprepared to say that a loaded firearm alone with a child in the home was enough to establish criminal liability.
Did the trial judge ever rule on that very hypothesis?
No, Your Honor. The trial court held that it was enough, that a loaded firearms, the presence of the loaded firearms were enough, not alone. And, of course, under Bolden, Your Honor, and Due, the appellate court must look at the entire record.
So the totality of the circumstances are inferred into the trial judge's ruling?
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I right that the entirety of the motion to strike on the child endangerment count is on page 96, which is, it should be stricken because we don't know where the child was and we don't know where the items were?
I believe it were two places in the record, page 96 and page 101. On page 96, the defendant argued, we don't know where the child was and we don't know where the items were. On page 101, we don't know where the child was. So those were the arguments that were made with regard to the child endangerment statute.
Well,
so there are two reasons.
We do know that the child was asleep, correct?
Yes, there was testimony which was unobjected to that the child was asleep and that the father was asleep.
And either one of them obviously could wake up at any moment.
That's correct, and this was a 4 or 5 year old child.
So the totality of the evidence, correct me if I'm wrong about this, was that there were unsecured firearms in two different places in the house, as well as bags of marijuana, 5 year old child in the home, both the child and the father asleep. Is that the totality of the circumstances?
Well, I would say that there's more. I would say that there were loaded firearms at child level, one underneath, loaded unsecured firearms, no baby gates, no containers, at child level, one underneath the sofa, which was, there's testimony that it was on the floor, another in the bed, and perhaps then put to the on the floor next to the bed within reach of the bedroom where the father was sleeping. There was also evidence of drugs in a potato chip box in individually wrapped baggies on the floor of the kitchen, unsecured. In addition...
No, when you say drugs, is it anything more than marijuana? Just trying to get the evidence straight.
There was no testimony that there was anything more than marijuana in that box.
They're still unlawful substances.
Yes, the legislature has determined that it is a dangerous substance and that it is illegal to possess it.
Do we know if the child was in a locked bedroom, in a crib, any of that?
There was no testimony with regard to the child being secured in any way. In fact, the only testimony
was... But there's no testimony to the contrary.
No, there is none.
There was a large amount of cash, was there not?
There was, $1,600 was recovered, and two cell phones in the same bed where the firearm was recovered. I would note...
Based upon the cell phones, the cash, the individual wrapping, and the amount of marijuana, one could infer that there was drug dealing going on from that.
Well, in fact, there was a conviction, which is not before this court, that there was possession with intent to distribute marijuana. So the intent to distribute, the knowledge of the character, the illegal possession, all of that, the fact that he had the present intent to distribute that drug was determined against the defendant and is a fact that this court can take cognizance of. In
addition, what did we get from a motion to strike that simply is identifying the presence and location of the weapons in the child to a court of appeals opinion that rules on, as a matter of law, unsecured weapons can never be a child neglect case.
Indeed, there was no argument about mens rea, about whether or not this was criminal negligence. None of that was offered. And so, therefore, the trial court had no opportunity to perhaps say, well, there was more than this. Even if I found that this was only enough, there was more than this, because that was not brought to the trial court's attention. And, in fact, this argument involved a factual issue about what officers went in first and where the people were. It presumed that if the guns were there, that it might be enough.
Right. Otherwise, you wouldn't have made the argument. You would say, I don't really care where the guns were. It doesn't matter. Because if you have unsecured guns in a house with a child, it's never going to be a neglect case. That's the way I read the Court of Appeals opinion. Did I unfairly read it?
No, Your Honor. This argument that the Court of Appeals based its decision on was not made below, and it was therefore went well beyond what the argument was that was preserved at trial.
Is there any evidence of the whether or not the defendant was intoxicated or impaired in any way?
I do not believe there was any evidence on the record with regard to that, but I would argue that that doesn't matter in this case.
Well, the only reason I ask is that in the Barrett case, the reason why the mother in that case was asleep was because she was passed out from drinking all night long.
Well, I would argue, Your Honor, that I would note that this was, I believe, in the early morning hours when this raid took place, but that another factor, of course, which I think the court had mentioned in both Jones and Carosi, which wasn't under this statute but was under the child endangerment statute, was that the dangers inherent of what's happening when you have drug dealing going on in the home not only involve what was mentioned here, which was that the firearms were at easy reach and that was a factor that was consistent with drug dealing, which, of course, creates a dangerous situation for the child. But in addition with that, there was this tag team entry. When you're dealing drugs in a house, there is certainly the opportunity that there's going to be a tag team entry where people are busting into the house with firearms.
Or
and that's a dangerous situation.
Or a competitor busting in.
Which is what the testimony was, that those firearms, that one of the reasons it was consistent with intent to distribute was because the location of the firearms, and the prosecutor mentioned this in argument, was disturbing because it was in a place where he could have easy access to it while he was sleeping if somebody broke into the house. And in fact, there was testimony elicited by the defendant in this case that it was consistent with distribution, not just inconsistent with personal use.
And there was testimony about the both of these guns being equipped with safeties and a lack of recollection about whether the safeties on the guns were on or off. However, that wasn't offered as a basis for a motion to strike, and so I take it that just doesn't factor into our analysis.
Well, I think that the record is somewhat confusing with regard to that issue, Your Honor. There was testimony that all that needed on behalf of the Commonwealth, which the evidence has to be viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, there was testimony that the all that needed to happen with the firearms was the trigger needed to be pulled. And then there was another place in the record where there was testimony that the firearms were made safe, perhaps by the state police, when they first came in, because that was their role in what was supposed to have happened here. So I think without it being clarified, and there was a testimony from one officer, I believe on cross-examination, that he could not recall with regard to the safety.
If it's the thought that the weapons were made safe by the state troopers when they came in, how do we know they didn't move the weapons? How do we know where the weapons were before they came in?
Well, the trial court made a factual finding based on the record that given the testimony at trial, Your Honor, and the about what the role of the state police was, he made a factual finding that the items were where they were found. and that there is no evidence
based on not anybody testifying as to where they were, but the role of the state police?
Well, that they were only in there for a few minutes, that it was a very small house, that their role was to go in and make the situation safe, and that there was, based on where the items were found, that there was no testimony that they had been moved. And that, so he made a factual finding, and unless that is plainly wrong, it's binding on this court.
Did the defendant counsel ever argue that they were moved or tampered with or in any way changed in the character of their operational ability?
No, Your Honor. And, of course, there was a finding a conviction in this case for possession of a firearm as a convicted felon, which demonstrates, of course, that he had possession of these items and he, of course, knew of their nature and character.
Why would the defense attorney make that argument when it's the Commonwealth's burden of proof to prove that the child was endangered by the weapon? I don't understand why he would even bring it up.
Because it's his argument to preserve his arguments on appeal. And so what he said was there's no evidence of where the father was and the son was. Didn't make any specific argument with regards to the firearms pertaining to the child endangerment charge. So the question here on appeal is whether there's evidence to show that the trial court was plainly wrong. And, of course, the court here is and the Court of Appeals.
Interestingly, the Court of Appeals didn't address that issue. The Court of Appeals didn't say, is the evidence sufficient to establish the trial court's finding that there was a gun by or on the bed and there was a gun under the sofa and the marijuana was in the kitchen. They never addressed that. They addressed a much larger issue which was never addressed in the trial court, and frankly, it was not even in the briefs.
Well, that's correct. And of course, Your Honor, my role is to respond to the arguments that are raised.
Right.
As the appellee, which I did. And then on the arguments that the Court of Appeals relied on here.
So with the argument that was preserved, which is because we don't know where the child was and we don't know where the items were, the trial court could say to itself, okay, I do know. I can find, and I am finding, that I know where both of them were. Well, that's it. The motion strikes over, right? There's nothing more to say.
Absolutely, and of course, the circuit court is entitled to reach reasonable inferences from the evidence. And those inferences are findings of fact. And here it's certainly a reasonable inference, even though that issue was not preserved, that the items were where they were found, given the limited role and the short time that the state police went in.
It's the Commonwealth's position, it may very well be correct, that the trial court said that the firearms alone were sufficient to sustain the conviction. The Court of Appeals picked up on that and said, no, it's not. But as the case comes to us, it's the totality of the evidence that is the issue before us, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's under Due and Bolden, that the court is not confined to what the Commonwealth argued or what the trial court relied on, but must look at the entire record. Although I would argue here that the Commonwealth didn't just rely on the firearms. The Commonwealth also relied on the drugs, also talked about the disturbing location of the weapons.
Clear that the Commonwealth did. It's not altogether clear that the trial judge did, but the trial judge had the same obligation to look at all of the evidence. And we have to look at the record as a totality, and that is your argument here today.
Yes, Your Honor. I see that I'm getting ready to run out of time. So I would just ask that you reverse this case unless the court has further questions.
All right.
Good morning, and may it please the ladies and gentlemen of the court, I'm Marlene Harris. I am here for your appellee, Kowan Wiggins. And I would just like to open briefly by saying I think that what this case comes down to is who came into the trial court and testified and who did not. And in this particular instance, only the Dinwiddie Sheriff's Department officers came in and offered testimony. The problem is the breach was performed by the Virginia State Police.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yes, sir.
If the motion to strike is simply, quote, because we don't know where the child was and we don't know where the items were, if that's the motion to strike and there's no other argument at all, am I right about that? Because correct me if I'm wrong about that last statement.
With respect to the felony child neglect, yes, okay. You're correct.
Then, underlying that argument, we don't know where the guns were, Your Honor. We're not sure where the child or the drugs were. The assumption behind the argument is that if we did know, then there would be sufficient grounds for conviction. That's the way I would hear that if I were a trial judge. That's not what was addressed in the Court of Appeals, and that's actually not the argument that's being made on brief now. The Court of Appeals addressed the question whether, if the only fact in this case were that there were guns in the house and they were not secured, would that, as a matter of law, permit a child felony neglect conviction, which was not the debate. It's not this case. So how do you get around that problem, if it is a problem, and if it's not, help me understand why it's not.
Your Honor, I don't believe that it's a problem, because if you're saying that, as a matter of fact, having weapons in the house is not a violation of the law or is not felony child neglect, then in this particular case, there's a firearm in the house and there's a child in the house.
But there's also a felon, and there's also a conviction with possession with intent, and there's also testimony that the guns are actually necessary or used for, consistent with, however you want to say it, actual distribution, and they are certainly in a place where you would expect them to have to be readily accessible upon a very short notice. And you're dealing with a 5-year-old child that has access to both those weapons, particularly the one under the couch. That's not the same thing as asking whether or not, if you have a shotgun in your house and it's loaded and you have a child, you can be convicted. That's a completely different case.
But, Your Honor, do we know that the child had access to it? Do we know that the child was ever left alone? Like the case in Jones, for instance, where that child was clearly alone within arm's reach of dangerous drugs. We don't know that this child was ever left alone so that he could have access to the firearm. We don't know where he was. There is an inference that he was sleeping in a separate room, but when the Dinwiddie Sheriff's Department entered the home, he was sitting on the couch with his dad. Yes, it's true, there's a firearm located under the couch, but we don't know that that child had ever been in that room alone where that firearm was, because items had been moved. It's clear from the testimony that...
Could a reasonable fact finder infer, particularly a reasonable fact finder that is a parent, that a 5-year-old child can grab something in a matter of 10 seconds while you're watching TV or going to get something from the fridge? I mean, is it really necessary to show child neglect that he actually picked up the weapon and pointed it at someone, the 5-year-old child did?
Well, certainly not necessarily show that he picked it up and pointed it at someone, but I think it is necessary to show that he would have been left alone long enough to be able to do that. And here, we just don't have that. What we have is that he was there, present in the home. And that, again, is why I don't think the decision from the Court of Appeals is a problem, because the Court of Appeals is saying the presence of the child and the weapon is not a felony child neglect violation. You have to have more than that. And in this particular instance, that's all we have. And if it please Your Honor, I just want to say, with respect to the drugs, the deputy testified that the drugs were actually found on top of the refrigerator, not in the floor where they were when the deputy came in. So we do know that that was moved. And that matters, because on top of the refrigerator is not accessible to a 5-year-old, yeah, unless we're talking about...
That's a fair point, but the way it works into these kind of cases is if there are drugs in the home and there's a reasonable inference that the person is either possessing drugs with intent to distribute or actually in the act of distributing, then those weapons are there for a reason, and it's not for shooting rabbits.
And certainly, Your Honor, I understand that position, but again, I say there's not an issue with the decision from the Court of Appeals, because there has to be evidence that this actually occurred. There has to be evidence that this child was actually left in a position to either have access to the marijuana or to the firearms. Say dad walked around all day with a kid on his hip. We don't know.
Is that a reasonable inference? Is that what dad did?
I think that's the heart of it, because we don't know where the child was. I mean, the evidence just doesn't show that. So if he's in a locked bedroom, or he's in some kind of crib or something that he can't get out of, then, I mean, the whole point is he might have access to the firearms. But is it a reasonable inference? I mean, how many five-year-olds, as opposed to maybe a two-year-old, one-year-old, are in some crib they can't get out of, as opposed to just a regular bed? How many parents lock doors so their kids can't get around at night? So I think the Commonwealth would have been in a much better position if they had established those facts. But then what I'm left with is, what is a reasonable inference about a five-year-old sleeping in this house? And if it's, for most families, the kid could have gotten out of his bed. If he's hungry, has a nightmare, whatever, wakes up, and he can start playing with a gun. So that's where I am, is trying to figure out what's a reasonable inference from the facts, and can you help me with that?
And, Your Honor, I think that would be a reasonable inference if a Virginia State Trooper came in and testified this child was asleep alone in his room in a bed that he could get out of without any assistance.
Well, then it's not an inference. It's just this, you know, there's...
Well,
exactly.
It's
been
no
proven.
An inference that he could get to it.
I
think it's much weaker. And I think it's more of a stretch than an inference in this instance to say that, because we just don't know. And so, there isn't anything that changes that.
So, counsel, you would argue that it's possible that there could be an inference that this child is never alone in the house. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, on the other hand, I can think of an inference where the child is alone while the father is taking a shower. I can think of an inference where the child is alone while the father is doing other things in the bathroom. I can think of an inference where the child is alone where, as Justice McCullough mentioned, the father is asleep and doesn't realize that the child has awakened. Would you agree with me that those are indeed reasonable inferences?
I would agree, Your Honor, that those are reasonable inferences. However, I would just ask the court to bear in mind that this is actually the early morning hours, or we'll say the middle of the night, where the father and the child are in the house alone. But we also don't know what the father does in the daytime to ensure the child's safety. Maybe someone else comes in and watches the child while he takes a shower, or while he goes to the bathroom. Or, again, maybe he walks around with the kid on his head.
Is there a reasonable inference that each time the father allows the child to be alone for 1 minute or 5 minutes, that the father actually goes out and finds someone who will come across the threshold in order to make sure that that child isn't alone for 1 minute or 5 minutes? Is that indeed a reasonable inference?
Well, Your Honor, it's as reasonable as the inference that the father would leave the child alone in the room where the firearms are on the bed. We just don't know.
And that's why we have to make inferences, and that's why we have to determine, is it a reasonable inference or is it an inference that could not possibly occur? So, anyway, thank you.
Well, I guess it goes back to the basic question of what fact are we drawing the inference from, and it almost seems like the Court of Appeals is saying it appears from what the judge says, he was drawing inference from the fact that the gun was in the house that the child would come into proximity with it. And they said, you got to have more than that.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. I think that they were saying just the mere presence alone is not going to be sufficient.
What do you have to say about the risk to the occupants, including the child, of other people entering the house, be they rival drug dealers or be they police officers who are executing a search warrant, perhaps a SWAT team? When somebody is actually found guilty of possession with intent to distribute a substance that's unlawful, Isn't it reasonable to assume that there may very well be some danger in that house?
Your Honor, I would just say that with respect to the danger, this is not a situation where there was distribution going on in the home while the child was present. There's no testimony about that. There's no evidence of that. There was an inference that because of the packaging and the money and the multiple cell phones that there was the intent to distribute, but I would just ask the court to differentiate between the intent to distribute and actual distribution occurring out of the home. And again, we get back to what are we...
What is that distinction persuasive to you? If I got a bunch of weapons in the house and I'm intending to distribute drugs versus you caught me red-handed distributing them, the inference of what the point of the gun is still the same. The gun is not, generally speaking, going to be thought of as a hunting rifle. It's going to be thought of as a self-protection or an aggressor weapon associated with someone who either is actually distributing drugs or someone who wants to and hadn't had the opportunity yet or maybe did yesterday and no one caught him. So, I don't see that distinction as being important, but you do. Can you explain why?
I do, Your Honor, simply because when we're talking about felony child neglect, not about whether or not you intend to do something that's not legal. It's about whether or not you've done that, and in doing that, you've put this child in danger. And right. So that's what I believe the difference is between making that inference with a possession with intent to distribute and actually distribution.
And it could make a difference if you're dealing somewhere else on the street, that you store them at your house, or you're dealing out of your house.
Which is correct.
You know, there was a very unfortunate case that this court heard in 2005. It happened in the city of Richmond, and there was drug dealing in the house, or storage of drugs in the house. There were drugs in the house, period. And a Richmond SWAT team was executing a search warrant, and in the process of executing the search warrant, a child was killed. Our opinion talks in great measure about the danger associated with the drug trade. This was not a trial neglect case. It was a civil action against the police department. But nonetheless, it's a reminder of how much danger is involved for occupants of the house, including innocent children, if somebody is engaged in drug trafficking or storage of drugs in a residence, and it resulted in the death of the child. I remember it well because I wrote the opinion. But in any event, I thought I'd let you know that the issue here is more than just where were the drugs, where were the guns. There is an actual conviction out of the facts of this case for possession with the intent to distribute. I suspect the guns were in the house because of the fear of other people perhaps coming in. And it also raises the inference that police officers might be coming in as well. It's of concern to me. Is it of concern to you?
And certainly, Your Honor. Again, we're talking about specifically the felony child neglect. There is a conviction, and I have to accept that and make my argument work around that. But again, we're still talking about felony child neglect and whether or not this child was left in a position where he could get his hands on firearms or just drugs.
Well, you're doing a very good job with your argument. I actually admire your argument. You're narrowing it and narrowing it. The question is whether or not we have to deal with the whole record rather than the narrow focus that you have offered us.
Absolutely.
Well, if we infer that if it's reasonable to infer that the child was asleep in Wiggins' bedroom, that the loaded handgun was in the floor in Wiggins' bedroom, and the loaded rifle was under the couch in the living room, would that be sufficient, do you think, for felony child neglect?
If we infer that the child was sleeping in the bed with Mr. Wiggins?
No, just in that bed, in his own bedroom. If we infer that the child was asleep in his bedroom,
yes.
The loaded handgun was in the floor in Wiggins' bedroom, and the loaded rifle was under the couch in the living room.
No, Your Honor, I don't think that's sufficient because we're now getting to the proximity argument, and again, whether or not the child had access to those items. We don't know anything about whether his bedroom door had a lock on it because he was sitting on the couch when the police came in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for your argument. Rebuttal.
I would just say that the record demonstrated that both the child and the father were asleep, and so it's the record has established that he was not in a position to be attentive to where the child was when the raid took place. And so in addition to that, there is no testimony regarding any locks, containers, child gates, or any other way that these items were secured.
Doesn't your position result in you can never sleep with a loaded gun next to your bed with a child in the house?
No, because, Your Honor, because there was also a loaded gun underneath the couch, and in addition, there were drugs in the house, and these were illegally possessed firearms, and there was evidence that he possessed them with the intent to distribute. So I would argue that it's not, the problem is, and how the Court of Appeals erred in this case is by making this a narrow issue when in fact there was much more evidence in the record to support the conviction.
If the evidence had shown the safeties were on, would that be a totally different case?
No, Your Honor, because again, we have the drugs, we have the firearms, we have testimony that the trigger could be pulled. It's sort of like the case where the 8-year-old could unscrew the top of the drug, which this court found sufficient because it was a danger that the child could do that, and certainly a child could turn off the safety.
Call the next case.